ברוכים הנמצאים, ladies, welcome. תראי שיעור פרשת בו, לעילוי נשמת רפאל בן רחל. Mr. Ralph S. Gindi, עליו השלום, dedicated by his wife and children. רוח השם תניחנו בגן עדן. Amen. Ladies, we're studying פרשת בו. Please go easy. I haven't learned in a couple of weeks. I've been on vacation, so I'm a little rusty, I'm sure. So please hold all your hard questions. Let's see what we have in Parashat Bo. We have 10 plagues. Of course, 7 of them we learned already in the previous Parashah, Va'era. Hachamim tell us that if you take the first letters of Va'era, it's Vav Aleph, which is 7, which alludes to us the 7 plagues. In last week's parashah, that leaves us with 3. Hence the name of our parashah is Bo. Bo, of course, is Bet Aleph, which is 3. And actually, the Rashi Tevot of Bo is the name of 2 out of the 3. Bet would stand for Bechorot, which would be Makat Bechorot, and the Aleph would stand for Arbe, which is the locust. Well, Hoshek is in the dark, so there's no mention of it. In any event, we came today to talk about the last 3 plagues. We came to talk about the last 3 plagues. Primarily, I actually came to speak about the last plague. But I cannot skip the 2 that preceded. So please allow me to make some observations on Makat Arbe and Hoshech. And then we'll get to the main entree, which is Makat Bechorot. Our parasha begins with Makat Arbe, that was the locust. And when the Torah introduces the plague, the Torah says, Ulma an tesaper beozne bincha uben bincha. Et asher et alalti b'mitzrayim. It is this plague that you're going to be able to tell over to your children and to your grandchildren. Let them know about this plague. And the question that we asked is, why specifically this plague are we going to tell it over to our children more than any other plague? I mean, I wouldn't have a problem if the Torah would write in the beginning of all the plagues, before the first plague, Makat Dam, Rabotai, there's going to be 10 plagues, and document them good, because we want you to tell these plagues over to your children and grandchildren, especially on the night of Pesach. But here, the Torah introduces Makat Arbe, and says, oh, it is this plague, Ulma'an Tesaper, so you can tell it over. I found the Kli Yakar on this. The Kli Yakar actually asks this exact question, and I read, more than all the other plagues. It says that there's a Rambam. The Rambam brings from Rabbeinu Hananel something incredible that you can actually even prove today in our times. And that is that the Middle East from time to time is plagued with locusts. It's a common phenomenon. However, Egypt is spared. You will not find locust in Egypt. That's what the Ramban testified, and he said, "V'im yipol be'eres Yisrael," and if locust comes to the land of Egypt, which is on the border of Egypt, "V'yikanes b'gbul Mitzrayim," and even if it goes over the border into Egypt, Eno ochel min yibul Mitzrayim klum. It's not going to eat from the produce. They just maybe jump around and make some havoc, but they don't eat anything. Vezeh yadua lakol. It's well known. He says, David HaMelech said in Tehilim, Sihu bechol nefleotav. You have an obligation to tell over the miracles of God, and this is a miracle. The next time you hear about a locust plague, you'll notice that in Egypt, they don't eat. So he says, why? Because when Moshe Rabbeinu prayed for the plague to go away. It says, "Lo nishar arbe echad b'chol givul Mitzrayim." That the plague will never be. There will never be a plague like this. Like it says in the pasuk, "Ve'aharav lo hiyechem." After this plague of Arbe, there will be no other plague like it. So comes the Rav and says, all the other plagues that happened in Egypt, there is no proof that the plague ever happened, that our children are going to ask us any questions. After the plague of blood, for example, it left. There's no remnant of the plague of blood. Sefardaya, Kinim, etc. However, there is a remnant in the plague of Arbe that our children might ask us one day. Pa, how come whenever there's a plague of locusts in Egypt, the plague doesn't devour the product? It doesn't eat the produce. That they can see even till today. And therefore it is the plague of Arbe that we tell to our children, because that's the plague that they can identify, because they still see the remnants of the miracle even until today. Sihu bechon nefleotav. So he writes at the end of his work, and he says, Shekolam makot shayu b'mitzrayim lo nishar behem shum roshem. There was no remnants of all the other plagues after the plague left, that the children should ask, Maze ba'al maze, that they're going to ask, what is this? Ki nishkach sichram, the plague was forgotten. However, Makat arbe nishar roshem ledorot, that plague still has a roshem, a trace. Gam achar hasarat makah, ki berov hayamim yimsu dorot davar chidush. They'll see this novelty. V'yiru ki yavo arbe velo yochal klum. It's not eating anything b'chol givul Yisrael. As vaday yishalu, the children will ask, madua ena ochelet. Why isn't it eating anything? And you will tell them, oh, Rabotai, there was a miracle. And from Arbe, you'll come and tell them the other miracles as well. You'll say, my dear child, not only was there Arbe, that you see today, but there was Dam and Sefadeh. So the Torah introduces Ulman to Saper, Davka by Makat Arbe. I'd like to ask another question. In this plague, it says that you will tell your children, Et Asher Hit Alalti B'Mitzrayim. What is Et Asher Hit Alalti? The mockery that I made. That not only did God bring plagues to Egypt, but God says, tell your children how I made fun of the Egyptians. How I, hitalalti means I made a joke of them. And there was derision. I made a laughing stock of the Egyptians, hitalalti. And my question again is, why by this plague of Arbe do we make the Egyptians more a laughing stock than any other of the plagues? On this I have two answers. One answer comes from our great rabbi called the Ben Ish Chai. If you notice at the end of last week's parasha, it says that the plague before Arbe was barad, was hail. That's the ice that came down with the fire, and it really destroyed everything that was in the fields, the trees and the produce, etc. Well, at the end of the parasha it says that Vahita b'kusemet, chita is the wheat, kusemet is the spelt. Lo nuku, they didn't get hit by the plague of barad. Why? Ki afilot hena, because they blossom later in the season. So it wasn't the wheat season yet, and it wasn't the spelt season yet. So those primary crops were spared. So what happened was, after Makat Barad, the Egyptians, they felt a false sense of complacency. They said, listen, Barad was bad, but it could have been worse. At least it didn't come a few weeks later when the wheat and the spelt, which is the primary crops, because if it would have came then we'd be in trouble. So they actually laughed at Moshe, that Moshe Rabbeinu miscalculated. The plague wasn't as devastating as it could have been. But that was only to set them up for the next plague, that once the wheat and the spelt started to sprout, what came into the fields? The Arbe. The locust. So therefore, et asher et alalti, I made a joke out of the Egyptians. The Egyptians think they're smarter than God. They think that it was a miscalculation. They think that the plague of Barad came early. We call this in boxing a 1-2 punch. The first, They got the barad, and then they let them have a full sense of relaxation and complacency, and then the makat arbeh came. So therefore, in this makat of the Ben Ish Chai, you see the joke, the practical joke, the good joke that God played on the Egyptians. There's another interpretation. We don't eat grasshoppers, although you can if you'd like to. A lot of the grasshoppers are kosher. There's a book was written by Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shelita, may live and be well. It's called Karnei Hagavim. He writes for us all the laws of kosher grasshoppers. If anybody's interested in eating it, you know, it's a lot better than a lot of things the Chinese are eating in their country. But nonetheless, there are variations of arbeh that are kosher. So what happened was that as the plague was happening, well, the Egyptians don't have any kosher rules, so they were saving all the locusts, and they were pickling them. At least it's free food. You know, although it's annoying, but at least you get all this free meat. You know how many plague, how much locusts there were? They probably had free food for the next 100 years. But the Torah says that when the plague ended, all those locusts that were salted and pickled were resurrected. There was Tehiyat HaMetim, and they all jumped out of their pickle jars and they left Egypt. So that was the mockery that we did. The Egyptians came along and said, ha ha, okay, the plague is difficult, but at least we got a profit from it. We got all this free food. And Borel said, what do you think? I don't know about that. All those free food pickles that you put in the jar, they left. So hence there was a mockery of the Egyptians in that plague. Now I must make the point, there's a rabbi called Rabbi Sirotzkin, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He wrote a sefer called Oznayim LaTorah. I recommend it to our readers, to our listeners. A great commentary on the Torah. He makes the following observation on this plague. When the Makkah came, it was blown in by the wind. As a matter of fact, the Pasuk says that there was a Ruach Kadim. Ruach Kadim is an easterly wind. Vayet Moshe et Mateo, Moshe picked up his staff. Vashem Niha, God guided. Ruach Kadim Ba'aretz. An easterly wind. Kol Hayom Ahu V'Kol HaLaila. And this easterly wind blew in the arbeh. No problem. Ruach Kadim, Asat Arbeh. The plague wreaks havoc. Of course, Paro comes along and says, I'm sorry, Hatati. They can leave. Please pray to God. And if you look at Paro's language, by the way, V'yaser me'alai rak et ha-mavet hazeh. He says, just take away the death. Don't take away the ones that are in the jars. Take away the ones that are killing us. Anyway, the pasuk says, "Vayafoch Hashem ruach yam hazak meod." Now, to get rid of them, you need a westerly wind. If the easterly wind blows them in, you need a reverse wind to blow them out. So that's the westerly wind. That's called ruach yam. That's the wind that comes off the yam, which is from the west. But the pasuk says, "Ruach yam hazak meod." So Rabbi Sirotzkin asks, why when the wind that blew it in, it doesn't say Hazak Me'od, it says Ruach Kadim, an easterly wind. Why, to get rid of the plague, does it refer to it as Ruach Yam Hazak Me'od, a strong wind? He offers four explanations. I'm not going to tell you all four. I will give you the last two that he says. Ruach Kadim Nashav Kol HaLayla Vuvat Arbe Me'at Me'at. He said, when God brings the plague, He brought it gradually in order to give the Egyptians a chance to make teshuvah. So the easterly wind was blowing the whole night. More arbeh coming, more arbeh, more arbeh. And until the Egyptians, to give them some patience or time to repent. Of course, they did not. However, when the plague is to leave, then he says that God says to Moshe, or Moshe prays to God, get rid of the plague. So to get rid of the plague, God gets rid of it in one moment. Therefore, to get rid of it, it says, Ruach Yam Hazak Me'od, a strong wind came, a gust or gale, whatever you want to call it, blew it away, and it went away in 1 second. But his last answer to me is the most enjoyable of his answers, where he comes along and he says, it's just simple biology. The grasshoppers, were they heavier when they came into Egypt or when they left Egypt? Heavier. Their weight. Obviously, when they left, for good reason, they spent 7 days eating. I mean, that's a feast. That's like a Hashverosh. 7 days, the Arbeh are going from field to field, and all they're doing is eating one Sa'udah after another Sa'udah. So clearly they were heavier on the way out. So Rabbi Seruskin writes, on the way in, all you need is a light easterly wind. However, after they ate for 7 days, they were heavy. So you needed a strong wind, ruach yam hazak me'od, in order to take the overweight or the bloated arbeh after that 7 days of gluttony. So that's the way he explains the arbeh. If I could say one word on makat hoshech. As I said, ladies, I came to talk about the last makkah. But if I have an opportunity, obviously the Torah put all three of these plagues in the parasha, so again, we should say something at least about each one. The ninth plague was darkness. Choshech. There is a Rashi, I can't say I found it, I mean everybody has access to it, it's not my find, but I did find something odd about this Rashi. Different than the way he explains all the other plagues. Rashi talks about Makar Choshech and he says, Lama hevi alehem Choshech. Why did God bring Makat Choshech? The reason why I find this peculiar is because Rashi doesn't ask this by any other plague. He doesn't say, why did God bring Makat Dam? That you have to go figure out on your own. Nor does he ask why God brought Sephardaya or Kinim. But for some reason, when it came to Makar Choshech, Rashi decided to ask the question, hey, this is a strange plague. Why did he bring it? So he says, Shayu be Yisrael be oto hador, that generation, there was Rishaim. There was wicked, I'm sorry to tell you, there was wicked Jews, even in that generation. Ve'lo ayu rotzim latzet, they didn't want to leave Egypt. And they died. They died during the 3 days, the first 3 days of the plague of darkness. God did that so the Egyptians won't be able to see it. Because otherwise they'll say, Jews are dying also, the plagues are affecting everybody. So when the lights came back on, the Egyptians had thought that maybe a lot of these Jews escaped. They weren't aware that they actually died and they were buried by the Havira Kadisha. And then the second reason that Rashi brings, Shechipsu Yisrael v'ra'uit kinehem. During the time that the lights were out, the Jews had access to go into the homes of the Egyptians and look where they keep all their valuables. Later on, they didn't take it, no. Later on, when they would leave Egypt, God would say, go borrow from the Egyptians their valuables. And the Egyptians would claim and say, we have no valuables. And we'd say, what about under the mattress? What about in the back? What about underneath the rug? How do you know? So we were in your homes during Makat Choshech, we didn't take anything. But in this way, we were able to locate exactly where all the valuables of the Egyptians were. That's the two reasons that Rashi brings for Makat Choshech. Now the question again is, why? Why does he have to give us this reason? I saw two explanations to this. One I actually heard from my Rabbi Acham Baruch Alav Hashalom. He told us that all the plagues lasted for 7 days, except for Makat Choshech, that lasted for 6 days. You know how the plague was? It was 3 days darkness, and then 3 days tangible darkness, where they actually couldn't even move for the last 3 days. So 3 and 3 is 6. It was not on Shabbat. So he said, why? So this could be what Rashi was questioning. Makat Choshech is different. So he wanted to know, why this plague, did not happen on Shabbat like all the other plagues. Now she's not interested in telling me the reasons for the Makot, but he saw something that was different about this plague than the others. So he asked, what was the reason? Well, once you know the reasons, now we know why it couldn't happen on Shabbat. The reasons were that when the Jews that didn't want to leave Egypt are going to die, so they needed to be buried. Now you can't bury on Shabbat. So therefore the purpose of the plague will not apply on Shabbat. Secondly, during the plague we went into the Egyptians' homes looking for their valuables. Clearly you cannot do that on Shabbat either, looking for money and things like that. So therefore that she, by giving us the reasons of the plague, he actually answers us the question why the plague did not happen on Shabbat, because the purpose would not allow the plague to be on Shabbat, because we did things that would be forbidden on Shabbat. There might be another answer. You know, ladies, this would be a good time to put on your memory caps. I'm telling you good ideas that you can say over at the Seder on Pesach. When they talk about the plagues, you remember these ideas, it'll definitely enhance your Seder. Pesach's right around the corner, as you know. In any event, there's another answer that I saw brought down in the books. The purpose of every plague was very obvious to the Egyptians, that they were the ones that were getting plagued and the Jews were not. Take a simple Makat Dam. The Egyptians knew that whatever they drink turns into blood, and they saw whatever the Jew drinks remains water. Frogs were the same thing. The Jew would walk into the Egyptian city, the frogs wouldn't touch him, and the frogs were jumping all over the heads of the Egyptians. Lice was the same thing. Every plague the Egyptians saw the difference. The only plague that the Egyptians really weren't able to determine that they were getting something different than the Jews was Makat Oshech, because they were in the dark. So they really had no idea if the Jew was also receiving this plague or not. It's the only plague that the Egyptian could have questioned, hey, the same thing maybe that happened to us happened to the Jews. So therefore that she comes out of his way and says, no, the Egyptians found out later on that that plague didn't affect them. You know how? When they asked for their valuables and the Egyptians said, we don't have any, and then the Jews were able to tell them, we know exactly where they are. When the lights were out for you, the lights were on for us. And therefore at that point the Egyptians would know that Makat Choshek was like the other plagues as well. That clearly there was a differentiation between them and us. Hence, that she goes out of his way to tell us the reason. He's really answering, how did the Egyptians know that the plague of Choshech was exclusively to the Egyptians and not to the Jews? Well, they found that out after the plague. Whereas in the other plagues, they found out during the plague. This they have to wait till after for the Jews to come along and locate all the valuables of the Egyptians. Alright ladies, we did it. We got through the plagues of Makat Arbeh and Makat Choshech. The last plague is called Makat Bechorot, the plague of the firstborns. There is a question over here that I'm sure you've asked. I know you know the answers to this one, but nonetheless, I will repeat it because of the beauty, the sweetness of the answers. The first nine plagues, we named them by the plague. Dam, Sephardeya, Kinim, etc. Arov, Dever, Shechin, Barad, Arbe, Choshech. It is only the last plague that we preface it by calling it Makat Bechorot. The Malbim asks the obvious question, why is that called Makat Bechorot? The plague of Bechorot. Just say Bechorot. Or Makat Dam, Makat Sephardeya, Makat Kinim. Why does the last and final plague get the title Makat Bechorot? I'm sure you could think of an answer. I'll tell you one answer that we said in previous years. If you were a firstborn in Egypt, you had to be scared when Moshe Rabbeinu announced that the firstborns are all going to die at the strike of midnight. I'll tell you why you had to be scared. Because the last nine plagues that Moshe predicted happened precisely. So he's batting 1,000. There's no reason not to believe that he's going to be right when it comes to Bechorot. The Gemara says that actually the firstborns of the Egyptians believed Moshe, and they went to their fathers and they said, let the Jews go, we don't want to die. The fathers, a lot of them who were probably not firstborns, they said, nah, don't worry. Yeah, easy for you to say don't worry. You're not a firstborn. But we're firstborns, we don't want to die. The Gemara says actually a civil war broke out between the firstborns and their families. And a lot of people died in that civil war. This was a fight against Egyptians, against the Egyptians. Now, that's not a bad war. Now, both sides are against us, but when they're fighting with each other, like we say, we hope both sides win. In any event, so there was a fight between the firstborns and their families. So that's why it says in the Mizmor, we say in Tehilim, Lemakem Mitzrayim Bibchorehem, that God attacked Egypt, not their Bechors, Bibchorehem, with the Bechors, which means the Bechors themselves attacked Egypt. That's why we say Makat Bechorot. It was not only the Bechorot that they died, but the Makat that the Bechorot gave to their own landsmen, to their own countrymen. Hence, Makat Bechorot, the Makat of the Bechorot to their people. But the Malbim, our great rabbi, gives, ladies, I'll tell you when we're going to start the class. This is just an introduction to get what I really came today. I do intend to reveal a great secret. But as I said, it needs, I need a little warming up. As I said, I haven't given a class in a while. Makat Bechorot, says the Malbim, all the other plagues, if you just hear the name of the plague, it indicates it's a plague. Dam, what else could blood be? Frogs, lice. The name of the plague indicates Makkah. But if you say Bechorot, what does Bechorot mean? Firstborns. Firstborns intrinsically doesn't represent a plague. So therefore, you had to add the word Makkah to the plague that does not have an intrinsic definition or meaning to mean plague. So therefore, the introduction to the word Makkah. That's over here. Now, Makat Bechorot was an incredible plague. I have proof that it was the highlight, it was the main plague out of the ten. You know, the plagues are moving gradually higher and higher until it reaches the apex of Makat Bechorot. That was the goal. Makat Bechorot was the highlight. How do I know that? You know, this is not the first time in our parasha that we mentioned Makat Bechorot. It was actually mentioned early on. If you go back to the book, Parashat Shemot, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Chaf Bet, I have it here. When Moshe Rabbeinu came down to Egypt, God tells him, you go to Paro, this is even before any of the plagues, you go to Paro, and you tell him the following. Va'amarta el Paro, you should say to Pharaoh, Ko Amar Hashem, so says God, Beni Bechori Yisrael. I want you to know something, Paro. I consider the Jewish people my firstborn child. Convey that to him. Bini Bechori Yisrael. And then tell him. Va'omar Elecha. Shalach et Bini V'ya'avdeni. You tell him, let God's son go serve him. V'tema'en neshalecho. And if he refuses, you tell him, Hine anochi horeg et bincha bechorecha. Behold, I will kill your firstborns. So, Makat Bechorot, by the way, was predicted from day one. By the way, that she makes a very interesting point over here. If you're a general and you're fighting against another army, the general never tells the opposing army what it's about to do. If you have a secret weapon, you don't tell them from the beginning, well, listen, don't start, otherwise we have this exact weapon that we're going to use. You keep it a secret. That's the whole art of war. But as she points out, God is not scared of anybody. Because nobody can stop God, even if He reveals the weapon. So God said, listen, I'm not, you think I'm scared of you, Paro? I'm telling you from the beginning, this is what I'm going to do to you. Now you know it, stop it. Good. I told you what I'm going to do. You still can't stop it. If you're going to play with my firstborn child, Bini Bechori, you're jeopardizing all the firstborns in this country. That was already spoken from the beginning. That means Makat Bechorot was already revealed to Paro on day one. This is what's destined to happen to you. Makat Bechorot. So that tells me that's the most important makah. God didn't threaten Paro and say, ah, be careful, there'll be frogs coming out of your ears. Although that happened. But He didn't warn him on that. He said, you're going to start off with my son. My son is the firstborn. Rashi over here says something incredible. Rashi writes, Bini Bechori, Kan Hatam HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al Mechirat HaBechora, Shelakach Yaakov Me'esav. You know, there's a big argument between Yaakov and Esav. Who's the Bechor? Esav came out first. So he's the biological Bechor. So Esav claims, the Goyim claim, we're the firstborn. At this point, God settles that argument that nobody can contest it after this. God says, I'm aware of this argument between Yaakov and Esav. I will now weigh in on the argument. And I'm sealing it and putting it to rest. But all you must become aware, Bini Bechori Yisrael. My firstborn is Yisrael. I don't know why he has to tell that to Paro. I mean, Paro's got nothing to do with that argument. I mean, go to Esav and go tell him that. But for some reason, he starts the conversation saying, you should know, Paro, who the Bechor is. And if you're going to mess around with my Bechor, you put all your Bechorot in jeopardy. Ladies, we continue. I have proof that Makat Bechorot is the most severe and the most significant of all the plagues. If you had to choose one, it's Makat Bechorot. My proof? Well, there's no better proof than the Siddur. I don't know if you ladies pray Arbit, but in Arbit, after Shema, there's a paragraph called Ve'emunah Kol Zot. Hazak Baruch, Hazak Baruchah. It talks about Egypt. So what does it say? God, you made us victorious over our enemies. You did to us Nisim, Nekama, Befaro, miracles. You took a revenge against Pharaoh. Be'ototu Mufetim, with wonders and miracles. I.e. means an example. Hamakeh Be'ebrato Ko Bechorei Mitzrayim. Killed their firstborns. Hey, what happened to Dam, Sephardaya, Kinik? No, that's generic. Ototu mofetim. But the one that we speak specifically, Hamakeh be'evrato, kol bechorei Mitzrayim, that one we're not going to just put under the heading of ototu mofetim. That one needs to be spoken out explicitly. Ladies, I don't know if you pray Sha'arit. I'm not questioning it. But in Shacharit, after the Shema of Shacharit, we also mention the Exodus. It's in the chapter called Ezrat Avotenu. And there we say again, Memitzrayim Ge'altanu, Adonai Eloheinu, Mebet Abadim Peditanu, Kol bechorehem harakta. That's it. Where's no dam, no sephardia, no kinim? We came out of Egypt, and don't forget, kol bechorehem harakta. I killed the firstborn. So to me already, the sidur is highlighting makat bechorot, and the Torah is highlighting it. Tell Paro, it's going to end with bechor. That's where it's going to end. That's the main weapon. Since I have the Sidur open already, I'd like to take you to the Tefillot of Shabbat. I know many of you come to Shul on Shabbat, to your credit. But if you come early, there's really a highlight on the prayer of Shabbat, right before Baruch She'amar. We say the great chapter in Tehillim, chapter 136. That chapter begins, Hudu l'Adonai ki tov, ki le'olam hasdo. The reason why this chapter is so unique, because it actually has ki le'olam hasdo 26 times. We praise God for 26 different events. I'd like to read them to you. Not all 26. Praise God. Okay, ki le'olam hasdo. Udu le'elohai Elohim. God, the God of all entities. Ki le'olam hasdo. Adonai Adonim. The Master. Ki le'olam hasdo. Now we start. You know how great God is? Le'oseh niflaot gedolot lebado. He does wonders. Wonders at the time of the creation. As an example, le'oseh Hashamayim, but Bunai created the heavens. Kiro la mazdo. Leroka ha'ares. He makes the ares, the earth. Kiro la mazdo. By the way, this is the first pasuk of the Torah. Bereshit, bara, Elohim, et, Hashamayim, et, so David HaMelech is saying, Shtabach Shemo. He made the Shamayim. Everybody respond, Kiro la mazdo. What a kindness. He made the ares. Shtabach Shemo. Kiro la mazdo. We continue. Ve'oseh orim gedolim. He made the luminaries. Et ha-shemesh. Ki l'olam hasdo. Et ha-yareyach. Ki l'olam hasdo. You following, ladies? What year are we in, by the way, so far? Zero. In this chapter, what year are we in? Year zero. Year the creation. This is year zero. First day, first week, exactly. Couple of days in. Okay, now I'm continuing to read. I read the next line. Lemakim Mitzrayim b'bchorehem. The one that attacked the firstborn, oh, the firstborn of the Egyptians. What year are we in? 2448. Wow! David HaMelech jumps from creation. Lemakim, well, nothing happened in between. And by the way, I have the whole book of Bereshit. Tell me about Noah. Kireh olam hasdo. Avraham. Kireh olam hasdo. Nothing. No mention. This is very telling to me that David HaMelech, in his chapter, he finds no problem to skip almost 2,500 year gap from Shamayim and Aretz to the Makim Mitzrayim b'chorehem. This is a very strong question. All right, ladies, I need to tell you a Maharal and then the revelation. We might have said over this Maharal from Prague, the number 10. You see the number 10 in a lot of places in the Torah. The first time you see the number 10 is that when God created the world, very good, He created it in 10 utterances. Ba'asara ma'amarot nivra ha'olam. And the Maral, the Gemara, the Midrash actually list them for us. You'll see. Actually, we said this many times, if you count, you'll see when God made the world, it says, Vayomer, 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 let there be, let there be. There's only 9 Vayomers. The Gemara says that the word Bereshit, although it's not a Vayomer, counts as one. So it's Bereshit plus 9. I guess, if I can explain to you why Bereshit is counted as one of the utterances and is not a Vayomer, because Vayomer you can only say after there's something to talk to. But in the beginning of the world, there's nothing there. So who are you talking to? Vayomer. Vayomer what? There's nothing here. So therefore, the first Ma'amar is just Bereshit. Okay, fine. Ladies, what else is 10? The commandments, you're absolutely right. You're right. But before the 10 commandments is the 10 plagues. That's an easy one. I'm not talking about the 10 commandments today. But I'm talking about the 10 plagues. So Maharal writes that actually the roots of the 10 plagues didn't start in Egypt. The roots of the 10 plagues actually start in Bereshit with the 10 Ma'amarot. And Maharal says something telling, interesting. He says that the way you have to do it is, Bereshit, as we see, is a ma'amar on its own. It's the most unique of the ma'amarot. He says Bereshit actually is keneged makat mechorot. So you have to go backwards. It's 1 against 10. I'll make it simple. What's the second ma'amar? Vayomer Elohim yehi or, let there be light. That would be against Hoshech. And you could go through all of them like that for another time. My point is, he says, Bereshit. Well, it makes sense to me. Bereshit also means the first. Bereshit, which would correspond, Makat Bechorot, which is also the first. Oh, there's some connection between Bereshit Bara Elohim and Makat Bechorot. All right. Ladies. Now I'd like to go to the revelation. If you'd asked me, the first Pesach, when was it? First Pesach? Since it's a tricky question, I would have said, oh, I know Avraham Avinu did Pesach. I know when the angels came to visit him, he served them matzot. So I know that trick question. You thought it was supposed to be in Egypt. No, they did it before. Avraham Abinu served matzah to the guests. So I know they were doing Pesach. That's what I thought. Till I prepared this class. And I found there's actually an earlier source, which is actually the first, clearly the first, celebration or commemoration or connection to this great holiday called Pesach. And actually the roots of it are in this episode. Gotta go to Bereshit. Adam and Hava. Adam and Hava have 2 sons. The Midrash says they were actually twins. Cain and Hevel. Cain, of course, is the Bechor. Cain came out first. He's the biological Bechor. Hevel came out second. Well, what does the Pasuk say? Ve'mi ketz yamim, it was after a certain amount of days, they decided to bring korbanot. Ve'yaveh Cain, mepri adamah min hal Hashem. Cain brings whatever he brings. Hevel hevi gamhu, and Hevel also brought. What happened all of a sudden that they woke up and they decided to bring korbanot? This over here, the paper that I'm holding, is Pirkei Derabbi Eliezer. Pirkei Derabbi Eliezer in the 21st chapter says, and I quote, Higiya Lel Yom Tov Shel Pesach. It was the night of Pesach. Amar Lahem Adam Lebanav. So Adam told his children,
Listen, on this night, Belel ze atidin Yisrael lakrib korbanot. On this night, the Jewish people are destined to bring sacrifices, korban Pesach. So therefore, I give you advice. Tonight is a good night to bring the korban, which is a chidush to me. That means it was Adam HaRishon that actually tipped them off and said, my boys, tonight would be a good night to bring your korbanot, because this is a night that Jewish history will always be bringing korbanot, korban Pesach. So the first Pesach actually was commemorated or hinted to Cain in heaven. I'd like to explain this a little more. I have a sefer over here. It's called Velo Od Ela. It's the name of the book. It's written by a great rabbi from Izmir, Turkey. Rabbeinu Eliyahu HaKohen Mi'Izmir. Great, great tzaddik. He's the rabbi called the Me'il Tzedakah as well. Midrash Itamri. He wrote many, many sefarim. This one we never read before. In Velo Od Ela, I'm reading chapter 21. He gives us the story, what happened here. To me, this is one of the most incredible secrets. And I quote, Amar lahem Adam. Adam tells his kids, Belel zeh, this night, Atidim Yisrael Hakriv Korbanot Pesachim. Hakrivu Gamatem. You too bring Lefne Borachem. So he asks, I don't understand, if it was Pesach, why didn't Adam himself bring? I mean, what kind of parenting is that? You tell your kids, you bring the Korban Pesach. Where are you going, Adam HaRishon? He's going out, what is he doing? You bring it yourself. He says, no. He says, Adam was not telling them. Adam was actually doing a test on his children. He was actually seeing, Adam saw in the future that there's going to be good people in the world, namely the Jews, and there's going to be the bad people, the oppressors, namely the Egyptians, the deniers of God. Adam also saw that the good people are going to come out of heaven. And the wise guys, the Pikursim and the Nishaim, they're coming out of Cain. That's what he saw. He wanted to know if these are people that are coming out, but Cain and Hevel are both good, or is Cain himself flawed and defected himself? Following what's going on over here? So Adam HaRishon says, we need to do an experiment. This was actually an experiment in parenting. He wanted to know who his children are. Who's Cain and who's Hevel? I know what's going to come out of them. As a matter of fact, if I may tell you, you remember in, this is what the Arizal said, I must have told this to you. You remember in Egypt, Moshe Rabbeinu killed an Egyptian? You remember that story? The Arizal said, what goes around comes around. Of course, in this story, Cain killed Hevel. The Arizal said that Moshe Rabbeinu was the Gilgul of Hevel, and the Egyptian was actually the Gilgul of Cain. So Cain definitely was in Egypt. It's Gilgul. Cain was part of the Egyptians. He was part of that culture. And you see, Hevel was on the good side. Hevel's Moshe is on the Jewish side. So Cain and Hevel, by the way, do resurface in Egypt. By then, it's clear, you don't have to be a brain scientist. You can see who the good guy and who the bad guy is. Cain and Hevel, Moshe and the Egyptian. Adam wanted to know, in his own children, is there a difference yet? Or maybe you could have two good children, and then from them comes out bad. Or maybe the children themselves, they have the midot. You following so far? I know I'm saying something that's novel, but I'm reading from the Sefer now, and I quote. So he says, Ratsa Libhon v'libdok. Adam was doing an inspection. You know, Leil Pesach, you make bedikat hametz. This is the first bedikat hametz over here. Adam and Yishon wasn't looking for bread in the corners over there. He was looking, making bedikat kayin. V'libdok et kayin. Shemimenu from him, mityahasim kol dorot hamordim, all the rebellious ones, the omrim, they say there's no God, we don't need God, we don't need his reign. So he was testing them. What type of korban is Cain going to bring? So the pasuk writes, vayaveh Cain, you know what he brought? Meperi ha'adama. I don't know what he brought. Some fruits. Some something that comes from the ground. Anybody have an idea what he brought? Rashi says, just read Rashi, you don't have to guess. Rashi says, Zera Pishtam. Flax or linen. It's cheap stuff. Why did he bring it? A lot of cheap stuff that grows from. He could have bought beans from the ground. He could have bought a lot of stuff that grows from the ground, but he chose to bring pishtan. Let me tell you something about pishtan. In the book of Bereshit, it's a long time ago, Parashat Bereshit, you remember the Torah talked about the four rivers? We didn't talk about this ever, but there's four rivers. One is called Pishon. One is called Gihon. One is called Hideke, that's the Tigris. And Perat is the Euphrates. I want to talk about the first river. Shem Ha'echad, that's the first river. Pishon. That she says, Pishon, Hun Nilos Nahar Mitzrayim. The Nile. Nahar Mitzrayim is called, interesting, the first river is the Nile. And then he writes, Dabar Acher, you know why they call it Pishon? Shehu Megadel Pishtan. Because in that region, by the Nile, in Egypt, that's one of their main commodities, Pishtan. Says the Biliyawa Kohen, Adam's looking at his son. What is he going to put on the Mizbeach? And what does he put on the Mizbeach? He puts down Pishtan. That indicated to Adam HaRishon that Cain is pro-Egyptian. He's bringing the commodity as if to say that this is what's valuable to Cain, the Pishtan. Cain himself relates to the problem, to the Galut. And now it's Hevel's chance. What is Hevel going to bring? And the pasuk says, "VeHevel levi gamu mebechorot sono." Yeah, you never paid attention to that. Son, sheep. Now, besides the fact that the Jewish people are called son, but we also know that what korban did the Jewish people bring on Leil Pesach? Sheep. So all of a sudden you see over here, heaven is connecting himself to the Jewish people, to Korban Pesach. So now you have a tale of two brothers, where Cain is bringing Pishtan that comes from the river of Nilos, which is Mitzrayim. I am sure Adam HaRishon was shocked when he said, that's what you're bringing on the Mizbeach. Why is he bringing Pishtan? That means what's coming out of you is actually you. And I quote the Rav, if I may. So he says, Evi zera pishtan amitkadel b'mitzrayim al yedei nilos. And then he says, Kelomar, as if Cain is saying, Ani atid liyot me'otam ha'yoshvim. I'm going to be from those that live in the place of Pishtan. That's what I serve. لشعبد لإسرائيل, in order to enslave the Jewish people. So therefore the bringing of the Korban Pishtan is against the redemption. V'im ken, when Hevel brings his Korban, Hevel brings the sheep. Says the Rav, this is the deep reason why the Torah forbids sha'atnez. Why we're not allowed to have a wool and linen blend. We always understood it simply because Cain brought linen, Pishtan, and he brought sheep, which is the wool. And therefore, it reminds us of the first machloket, therefore you can't put these two things together. But according to the Rav, it's much deeper. The flax represents Egypt, and the wool represents Bnei Yisrael. Once we left Egypt, God said, do not put these two together again. We're never going to go back to that place. If you put them together again, that represents the wool is going to go be back to the Pishtan. That Klai Yisrael is going to be under slavery of the Egyptians again. So we want to separate those two by putting them together. Chas v'shalom, we're bringing the Jews back into the Mitzrayim. Therefore, these things are contraband. These things are considered forbidden to be intertwined together. That's the sod of sha'atnez. Oh, so the secret. By the way, I will tell you now what Rav Chaim Palachi said. Chaim Palachi wrote a sefer called Par Echad. I think I have a copy of it somewhere over here. When the Jews left Egypt, what's the first thing that it says when Jews left Egypt? We sing a song every day before Az Yashir. Vayosha. Ayosha Adonai Bayom Ahu. God redeemed us, or He answered us. He brought us a salvation. The Egyptian redemption is introduced with the word Vayosha. Well, you remember Hevel brought the Korban? It says, Vehevel Evi Gamu Bechorot Sono. He brought the sheep. Israel's the sheep. Korban Pesach. What does it say? Vayisha Adonai El Hevel. If you want to know where the first Vayosha was, the first Vayosha was not in Mitzrayim. When Hevel brought this Korban, God says, hey, you just made Vayosha, you just created it. You're from the Jewish people. Already there was a prediction from the beginning. Of Adam HaRishon was watching the whole history in front of his eyes, in front of his two children. The story of Cain and Hevel. The story of Cain and Hevel. And now we go back to our points. What I'm telling you now was said by the great rabbi called the Shlach Kadosh. The Egyptians come from Cain. The Egyptians' claim always was, we're the firstborn. We come from Cain. And we're the Bechor. And if we're the Bechor, so when it says in the Pasuk, Bereshit bara Elohim, God created the world for the Reshit. God created the world for the nation that is Reshit, Bishvil Reshit. And the Egyptian always claimed, we're the Bechor, we're the chosen, we're the purposeful ones. That's why you'll notice the Shlach Kadosh says, everything they worship is the Bechor. They worship the Nile, because that's the first river, Pishon. In the zodiacs, they worship the sheep, because that's the first of the signs of the zodiac. They do this in order to show that they are indeed the Bechor. Of course, God wants to tell them, excuse me, Mitzrayim, I know you came from Cain. He's the biological Bechor, but you're not the Bechor. The first thing God does, He hits the Nile with Makat Dam. He hits the Bechor. The Nile, which is Pishon, Makat Dam. There's your first Bechor. And then, of course, the final plague is Makat Bechorot. Makat Bechorot is not just a plague against Bechor. It's a philosophical argument that God is now telling Paro, you are not the firstborn. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu goes to Paro, and he shocks him, the first meeting. He says, I want to tell you something, Paro. Beni Bechori Yisrael. Paro says, what? Beni Bechori Yisrael? You're the Bechor? What are you talking about? I'm the Bechor. Kayin. At that point, God said, we don't go according to the biological Bechor. After all, Yaakov was not the biological Bechor. But on that day, God said, Yaakov is the Bechor, because he, you ever hear the rule, first in, last out? When twins are born, the first one that's conceived is the second one that comes out. So really, Yaakov was the firstborn in conception, although he didn't come out until the second. The same thing with Cain and Hevel, they were twins. Hevel is the first one in conception, although Cain is the first one. God makes the decision on that day that you're not the Bechor, Paro. Beni Bechori Yisrael, just like Yaakov is the Bechor, and therefore, in my book, Hevel is considered the Bechor, and therefore the Jews are considered the Bechor. And therefore, when I created the world Bereshit, I created it for the one that's the Bechor, and I created it for Yisrael. Bishvil Yisrael shenikreu reshit. This was the big argument. And he says, and if you're not going to listen, you're going to have to suffer. I'm going to go after all your firstborns. That was to tell Paro, you have no status of a Bechor. Klal Yisrael beni Bechori. And therefore the world was created for them. That's why after 50 days when we left Egypt, we came to Har Sinai, and God gave us the Torah, because that's why the world was created, so the Jewish people could accept the Torah. This is an argument that was laid to rest. For hundreds of years, the Egyptians were saying, where the Bechor, where the Bechor? And on that night, God said, go take the Bechor of the sheep and slaughter it. That's also a Bechor. Slaughter it. And put it on the Mizbeach. Exactly what Hevel did 2,448 years prior. That's why David HaMelech, when he writes the Tehillim, he says, Le'oseh HaShamayim, God created the heavens. Bereshit bara Elohim et HaShamayim, Ki Le'olam Azdo. Le'rokah Ha'ares Alamayim, God created the Ares, He created the earth. So you're in Maaseh Bereshit. But then David HaMelech says, when did Shamayim and Aris, when did we see who the purpose of the creation of Shamayim and Aris was? Lemakem Mitzrayim bebchorehem. When God went and killed the Bechorot of Mitzrayim, it was at that point that we realized who the Shamayim and the Aris were created for. He didn't skip 2,400 years for no reason. Makat Bechorot comes along and reveals to us who the Bereshit is. And therefore, Makat Bechorot is the most significant of the plagues. Because that plague over there establishes whose God's chosen nation is. Who is the Bechor? It's not Cain, it's Hevel. Hence, we are forbidden to put the Shapnez together. And at that point, Paro realized that for all those years that he was walking around saying, I'm from Cain, Cain's the Bechor. Not only you're not the Bechor, but Yaakov is the Bechor, Beni Bechori. And once all the firstborns died in Egypt, that argument was put to rest, was settled, and Klal Yisrael would then have the mantle of why the world was created. Bishvil Yisrael shenikreu reshit. If that's the case, ladies, we conclude. We are also now leading to the final redemption. I know you're not surprised. It's no secret that we are in Galut, and we are also waiting a final redemption. And Egypt is the template. Egypt is the model of all exiles. And the redemption of Egypt is the model as well. Well, right before we left Egypt, there was Makat Hoshech. There was darkness. Well, there's much darkness in the world today. I don't have to tell you. The darkness is not a physical darkness, but it's a darkness of values. The world is in a very, very low place of ethics, of decency, of what what the world has degraded itself to in the perversions and the lowliness, Hoshech. But at the same time, when there was Makat Hoshech, what does it say about the Jewish people? Ulchul b'nei Yisrael hayaor. By the Jewish people, there was light. We are not seeing a generation like our generation where there's so much light of Torah like we have today. As the world is steeped in darkness, intangible darkness, Klal Yisrael is involved in Or, where thousands of people go to watch sporting events, like the events that they go to on a day, and we go to events to celebrate light. Oraita is light, Torah Or. We're seeing it in our generation more than most generations. The light of the Torah is expanding in front of our own eyes. There is tremendous Or. But then, there's one more thing that has to happen. Unfortunately, anti-Semitism is still very strong. The Goyim come along and say, "We're the Bechor. We're the majority. Israel, you're a small little nation." And they bully us around. And they tell us, and they deride us, and they push us around. But will come the same thing that happened at Yitziat Mitzrayim, where God is going to announce to the world, Bini Bechori, that small nation, that nation that you've prosecuted for so many years and you've picked on because you think it's a little kid, that's my firstborn you started with. And then at that point over there, the world will come to recognize that not only God is the God, but Klal Yisrael is His firstborn. And at that time, redemption follows. So we're right at that critical point. We're at Makat Hoshech now. We're just a few moments away from the revelation of Bini Bechori, that Klal Yisrael is from Yaakov, and Esav is not the Bechor. Esav is the Katan, and Cain is the Katan. We don't go on the biological birth, we go on the time of conception. And when God conceives the world, Bereshit is conception. The world was not created, it was a conception. God says Bereshit is conception, and the Bechorot follow the conception. And at that point will be fulfilled the Pasuk, Ki mesetecha me'eretz Mitzrayim, ad enu niflaot, that just like God took us out of Mitzrayim with those wonders, God will take us out of Mitzrayim, the current Mitzrayim, Yitziat Mitzrayim, Yitziat Galut Romi, v'merav yamenu, amen.